And welcome to Equilibrium on CKUT 90.3 FM. This is Ryan Young. We have a great show for you today. We have a special guest that's going to be in studio with us, Ben Herrick, who is with Vision of Earth. And we're going to be talking about an upcoming event here in Montreal, basically to fight climate change or help avert climate change, convince our governments to do something about it. And we're going to start off today's program with some music from The Pining, and this is Seed of Doubt.
In the pit of my stomach there germinates a seed of doubt.
Welcome to Equilibrium on CKUT 90.3 FM. This is Ryan Young, and that was the tune Seed of Doubt from The Pining, from, I guess, their self-titled debut. So, we have a great show for you today here on Equilibrium on CKUT 90.3 FM, also heard on the World Wide Web at www.ckut.ca. Well, there's all kinds of events coming up to do with climate action, climate justice. There's been some real strong civil disobedience actions in Washington, D.C. recently. Lots of arrests and so on. And, of course, here in Montreal and in the rest of Canada, there's other events going on to basically put pressure on Canada, the United States, to act on climate change and to avert, I guess, as well, this pipeline that's being built from Alberta all the way to Texas. So there's an event coming up here in Montreal on September 24th, which is called the Moving Planet Picnic and Kilometer Drive, and it's a worldwide rally to demand solutions to the climate crisis. So people are being asked to come on bikes, on skates, on a board, or just on foot, and bring their neighbors and their friends. And basically, it's going to be in Jean Mounce Park, September 24th, which is a Saturday between 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. And so, of course, you're also supposed to pack a picnic. So one of the organizers is with me today in studio, Ben Herrick. And Ben Herrick is also the founder of Vision of Earth, which is a blog, which is basically using the knowledge that humanity has collected to propose ways of facing the practical challenges that our society faces. So, Ben, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great.
So tell me a little bit, we'll get into the event later, but tell me a little bit about how you decided to put together this website or blog called visionofearth.org.
Well, for a number of years, I've been very concerned with human well-being in the world. And around 2006, I was exposed to some ideas in what's called regenerative design, to do with driving industrial and agricultural cycles with just the power of the sun, and ideally we have no waste and all of these ideal things we'd love to have in our society. At the same time, Saskatchewan, where I'm from originally, was facing a number of major issues, especially with regards to power production. So a team of undergraduates, including myself, decided to conduct a feasibility study on a number of major choices, including nuclear power. And that was really our start into trying to solve these problems that our society seems to be facing.
Now, you're doing your master's in physics here at McGill. So I imagine, you're approaching some of these problems from a very scientific point of view.
Certainly. We're attempting to take what we know from science. Both myself and some of the other volunteers are quite trained in science and the social sciences as well. Take what we know from those fields and apply them to the problems, because some of these problems are multidisciplinary or cross-disciplinary. They demand cooperation or a breadth of knowledge that is tremendous.
Well, give me an example of what you were talking about before. Is that similar to cradle-to-cradle type approaches to production of various goods and services?
Yes, certainly. Actually, it was cradle-to-cradle, the talk by William McDonough on TED.com that got me really started in this stuff. So that's it's funny that you mention it. I also read Cradle to Cradle, the book, and really it's a highly recommended work for anyone interested in these economies of infinity, as you might call them, where the end, there is no end game. We're planning for the infinite future here.
Well, yeah, I've seen him in an interview where he talks about, he holds up a water bottle, and the water bottle, he says, sure, it's recyclable, but it's only going to be recycled once into, let's say, a park bench, for example, and that's where it's going to end. And he talks about how, well, we should be designing things that can be recycled sort of over and over and over again. Can you give me some examples of that, or maybe some comparisons? Or
certainly. One of the terms they use for that sort of recycling, recycling in quotations here, and it's known as downcycling, because the quality of the material tends to go down with each iteration of that process. Plastic is an example of something that tends to degrade with every recycling. it is possible to take high-quality stainless steel and some other metals through infinite cycles with essentially no waste. There's extremely little waste if things are done well, if you plan the process from the very beginning with that in mind. If you try and tag it on to the very end, it's extremely difficult. It takes a lot of energy. It's very costly to try to make a already existing cycle perfectly renewable. That's really the key, is planning from the beginning.
And have you thought much about what is preventing enterprises from doing that type of production?
Well, one major hurdle is when you invest in both the intellectual effort and the mechanical effort in designing and producing one of these cycles, your materials are more valuable than they were before. So if you buy a car that is 100% recyclable, the effort that went into producing it, all of the materials and the design, is actually higher than with a currently existing car. That means, in theory, its cost would be much higher. However, with a system such as this, the cost of the car actually doesn't degrade as quickly, because most of the value is actually in the quality of the materials. So at the end of this car's life, it could be returned to a manufacturer and most of the value could be reclaimed. However, we don't have a good system for that sort of thing in our culture, especially North America. You might think of it as leasing it for 10, 20 years, but people don't like leasing things. They like owning them. This is a bit of a hurdle to the creation of a system like this.
Hmm. And is there also an issue where companies are sort of working isolated from each other and they're only concerned about making sort of a quick buck on the one item and they don't really care what happens later on because that's not the motivation for the company?
There's actually a running joke in the cradle-to-cradle world that companies get their products from producers and they give them to consumers, and that's really all they know about them in a lot of cases. A holistic approach is certainly necessary. Someone needs to generally start with a conception of what a product, even if it's something as complicated as a car, will be at the end, what's the end goal, and then start the design process from a fundamentally different point than where you're looking at the final step, delivering the car to a consumer and thinking, where can I get these parts? Because every one of those part manufacturers is using slightly different belief systems, I guess I could say, to as the basis for their production.
Okay. So getting on to this event on September 24th, this Moving Planet picnic and kilometer drive, how did you get involved in that?
Well, actually, as far as I know, it was as simple as a Facebook invite. The event was created. I'm not exactly certain. I believe it might have been David Summerhays who created the event on Facebook. I was invited through a chain of friends. It was one of those 6 degrees of separation thing. And then, similarly, I was invited to this planning event. So I decided to show up. And since then, I've been part of the planning committee.
Cool. And so what's the general aim of this event?
Well, I think of it as a celebration of our society's transition towards sustainability. Some people in the world have interpreted the Moving Planet idea as a protest. That isn't the perspective that we've taken. Okay. We've oriented more towards a celebration where we're exchanging information and ideas. We're celebrating our modes of transport through that kilometer drive, which maybe our listeners would be interested to know is this simply a marked out kilometer. It's all paved, and if you finish it, in an eco-friendly way, you can get a green smiley face or something, a sticker for your shirt. And so, of course, it'll be interesting to see how many people do various modes of transportation around this kilometer, and maybe pushing baby carriages so they get double kilometers each time.
So where is that kilometer? Is it in Jean Mons Park?
The kilometer is in Jean Mons Park. It'll be clearly marked out on the day. And we hope it'll be a lot of fun.
Nice. That's great. And in terms of your writing with Vision of Earth, How does that work? Do you have contributors that write for the site? Do you write a lot of the material?
Well, since its foundation in 2007 or so, Vision of Earth has been primarily my brainchild, but certainly a few of my co-contributors, especially Kyle Laskowski, have been absolutely central to the development of the ideas and articles that are on there. So while I might have done 70% of the work for the website and writing and editing, it is very much a peer-authored and peer-reviewed system. Although we don't have an official peer-review process, I tend to bounce articles off of relevant people who have relevant skills, economists, sociologists, physicists.
And I guess that's not too hard when you're in a university environment like you are studying here at McGill.
Well, certainly. I met all of my co-contributors for Vision of Earth while I was in undergraduate studies at Regina.
Nice. And so for you, what is the most important thing to sort of get out on your website? Is there a particular area that is the closest to your heart or an issue that you think demands the most attention today in the world?
That's quite the question. There's probably five or six things that I would say are right at the top of my proverbial list, the grocery list for our society. Really, what I'd focus on is many of these problems affect one another. Poverty affects the sustainability of our global civilization because it has influence on the structure of our cultures, on our overpopulation problem, and just across the board, we end up seeing this connection between the problems that we face. So while on Vision of Earth, a person might see an article on politics or economics or electric power production, at some level, all of these things are very much connected issues.
And in terms of the cradle-to-cradle sort of philosophy, how much does that play a role in the website?
It's interesting because cradle-to-cradle forms part of our basic knowledge about the world, about how we would like the world to be. So it is more of an end goal, but one that we rarely mention explicitly on the website, I have to say.
And in terms of, you were talking about growing up in Saskatchewan and you know, what are some of the issues facing the province of Saskatchewan or I guess, for example, the world of agriculture?
Saskatchewan is facing major changes in a number of areas. First of all, it's being affected by climate change in some very interesting ways, ways that we're not entirely sure of yet. One expectation was that the prairies would dry off quite a bit. There's a lot of research to support this fact. On the other hand, we've seen three of the rainiest years in the history of the prairies, the written history of the prairies. So we're seeing excessive flooding and total change of the summer climate.
So in Saskatchewan as well, eh? Not just Manitoba.
Yeah, that's Saskatchewan, certainly, yes. There's been excessive flooding as well in Saskatchewan. Another major issue facing the society is electric power production. Saskatchewan produces most of its power from coal still. It's one of the very few places in Canada that still does. And that is partially because of a lack of great hydro resources, which exist in most other Canadian provinces. This power problem is really where Vision of Earth got its start, studying the Saskatchewan context, and so we're actually in the early stages of writing a book intended to educate the public in Saskatchewan and the prairies in general about the prairie power systems and how we could innovate them for a sustainable future.
How much do you see solar or wind playing a role?
Well, eventually, solar and wind would play very major roles. Saskatchewan, in particular, has incredible wind resources. One of the only really big wind farm in Saskatchewan has what is called a capacity factor of 42%. 42% is extremely high in the world of wind. Some of the big wind farms in Germany and Ontario will only be in the mid to high 20s. So it's one of the best wind farms actually in the entire world. So it's a good example of what Saskatchewan is capable of as far as the energy resource in the wind. Also, the solar in especially southeastern Saskatchewan is very exceptional. Also, the best, pretty much the best in Canada, which is also one of the best in the world. One major problem is both of these resources are somewhat intermittent and would need to be coupled with other energy resources that could be turned on when we need them, because we don't want to freeze in the dark.
Right. And it does get cold in Saskatchewan in the winter. And so there you looked at power and so on. What's going on in agriculture in Saskatchewan? Is agriculture dying out in any sort of way, or is it just changing in the way it's organized?
Well, as far as its relevance to the economy as a whole, agriculture has slowly fallen in importance because other industries have risen in Saskatchewan. There's extreme amounts of mining, potash, oil. So agriculture actually ranks somewhere in the 6th to 7th range in the industries in Saskatchewan. As far as reorganization goes, we're seeing the end of the small family farm and an exodus to the cities. Saskatchewan is fairly rapidly urbanizing, while before it was one of the least urbanized provinces in Canada and actually in the entire developed world. So we're seeing the rise of mega farms, corporate farms, replacing these smaller operations.
And there is pressure, of course, like in Alberta, to develop tar sand deposits, I guess, in Saskatchewan. And where's that at right now?
Well, there's a great deal of public... there's certainly a public sentiment against the development of tar sands in Saskatchewan, but there is also some support for it. It is not clear at all where that's going to go. The government of Saskatchewan seems quite keen to put the economy first. Their eye is not generally towards long-term sustainability, at least judging by their recent decisions. So I would expect the discussion to continue. However, competing with the existing tar sands operation without oil prices being ridiculously high, I feel like it's not that likely that we'll see that development in the next few years unless we see, again, another gigantic spike in oil prices.
Hmm. And being an educated person and spending a lot of time studying these things, do you find that the mainstream media tends to skew these issues and not really present a full picture and give everyone all the information they need?
I certainly believe that is true. The mainstream media, certainly in all of North America, I'll limit my comments to North America, are generally very large corporations. Very large corporations tend to do better with less regulation. They're able to use their market size to their own advantage, serve their shareholders. That's actually their legal duty. So in some senses, they're legally bound to oppose changes in regulation that would lead to loss of profits for their shareholders. That said, the Canadian media is in general rather good. There are some, I would say, political issues, especially around the elections. We suddenly see all of the major media supporting the Conservatives, while during the rest of the years they're quite critical, and I'd say rightfully so. This is a fairly major issue, and I see it more of a corporate issue sneaking into our media landscape in Canada, which does bother me, since we pride ourselves on the quality of our media. I'm not certain exactly of the path forward, but I do know that I'm rather proud that Canada has a regulation against false and misleading news that is still in place, partially because of the huge public outcry earlier this year on that note.
Mm. I guess that might be a bit different from the United States.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd say that's a safe statement to make.
And do you find at McGill that students are engaged with these issues? Is it getting better in terms of raising awareness amongst the student population, or Is it just kind of staying where it is, or is it getting worse?
I think it's pretty clear that McGill has some incredible sustainability movements that are moving forward. The Sustainability Projects Fund is prominent, obviously, in that sense. When you're allocating hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars towards these projects, I think that shows the general support for these things among the student populace and the administration as well. I do certainly appreciate those movements around McGill. As far as my perceptions of McGill as compared to other universities or other places I've been, my perception is biased because as soon as I came here, I was immediately beginning to be involved in various, like for instance, green drinks, which happens at Thompson House once a month, and I also ended up being the teaching assistant for Energy and Society, which is a physics class about energy and the environment. So obviously, it's about exactly these major issues in our society.
And if people, if you wanted people to know something about Vision of Earth, your blog / website, and you wanted people to check it out, what would you like them to know?
Oh, that's a good question. I think the most fair assessment I can give is that we're attempting to knit together our knowledge with our experience and fairly ruthlessly scrutinize our own biases and our information sources to do our very best to present a clear picture of the way the world is and how it could be changed in the near future. These efforts are always involving more than one person, and we've created a culture of it's hard to say, but this peer review culture, this scrutinizing belief systems to of close friends as well as people you might disagree with a lot, it teaches you a lot about your own belief system. And really, when you get down to it, belief systems are the core of how we perceive the world, and that's very important when you're trying to address what really appear to be systematic issues in our society and culture. So one of my undergraduate degrees is in psychology, actually. So this topic is rather close to my heart. I see psychological concepts and ways of thinking within economics and within our approaches to the sustainability crisis. So if a person reads Vision of Earth, what I can guarantee is we are doing our very best to knit these strands of experience and knowledge together to form what is hopefully a very cohesive and complete picture of the world.
That's great. So if people were interested in going to this event, Climate Action of Montreal, it's on the movingplanet.org website, but it's also, you can find it through going to 350.org. And is there a particular reason why it's connected to that?
I believe Moving Planet was originally a 350.org project. Yeah. And the Montreal incarnation is simply that. It's us being given the Moving Planet idea, concept, logo, and really we just run with it in terms of a volunteer project. It's entirely run by local volunteers. It's not a major organization running this.
Okay, great. Well, this event has a Facebook page event as well, and it is coming up September 24th, 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. at Jean Mouse Park, and it's a worldwide rally to demand solutions to the climate crisis. People are being asked to come on bike, on skates, on a board, or just on foot, and to bring their neighbors and their friends, their family, their coworkers, and be part of this huge deal and demonstrate the power of active transportation. So you will be able to contribute a kilometer to our active transportation drive, which is to walk, bike, or even juggle 1 kilometer to demonstrate the power of active transportation. How do you plan to do the kilometer yourself?
Oh, that's a very good question. hopefully I'll find people to talk to, and I'll do some nice social kilometers on foot. I might run some. I don't actually own a bike right now, so I might have to borrow a bike if I want to do a cycling kilometer.
Okay, great. Well, thanks so much for coming on the show today, Ben.
Yeah, thank you.
So that was Ben Harrick, who is the founder of Vision of Earth and one of the organizers of the Moving Planet Picnic and Kilometer Drive here in Montreal on September 24th in John Moss Park. If you're interested in checking out Vision of Earth, you can do so at www.visionofearth.org. That's www.visionofearth.org. You're listening to Equilibrium on CKUT 90.3 FM, and we are going to take a little break for some messages and be right back after that. So stay tuned to CKUT 90.3 FM.